This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
The piece of Gemara that we'll be doing tonight is from Ksuvos Daf Samach Gimel. But before we go into that, this is Oruch HaShulchan, this isn't the Shulchan Oruch. Is it down at the bottom there? Yeah. We're going to deal with the same ideas that I spoke about at the Mizrahi Shul on Shabbos, in the Shul itself when we spoke during the Davni. So I'm going to show you that Gemara inside and we'll understand it with a little bit more detail. And I'm going to start with the halacha, with the Shulchan Aruch, and then we'll go back to the source of the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch is in Siman Ayin, in Evan HaEzer. And it deals with the obligations of mutual support between a husband and a wife. And it, in Siman Ayin, talks about Din Chiyuv Mezonos Ishto Yuvonov, the obligations of support of a man for his wife and children, ve'im chayav lahaskir atzmo, and whether he has to hire himself out. Now, the obligation for a man to his children, we dealt with in the last Daf Yomishir, which was only about 2 weeks ago, but it wasn't in Johannesburg, it was in Los Angeles, and it's on the website if you wanted. That was the obligations of a man to his children. Which is interesting. But here we're focusing on the obligations of a man to his wife. So what does he have, how does he have to support her? Let's go through these halachas, they're important. Ketzot chayev b'mzunaseho. What does it mean? You're chayev, you're obligated to support your wife. And the word used is mzunas, her food. So taking the food support, what kind of food support is that? Oicheles v'shoiso mimashuhu oichel v'shoise. She eats and drinks from what he eats and drinks. So he doesn't kind of go to fancy restaurants himself and have her, you know, manage on some meager diet at home. And if her entire family eats in a sort of a banquet kind of a way, he has to make sure that she continues that while they're married. If they aren't, if your entire family doesn't eat in a big way, then provided she eats with him, then they eat his way. So if her entire family eats in a very lavish way, then he's got to make sure that that continues. There's no need for her to drop that standard. But if only some people in her family do and some people don't, then she eats what he eats. But if for any reason she's not eating with him, then she has to eat in the same style that she was accustomed to in her father's home. What about a man who wants to give his wife the food that she is entitled to? He says, the only thing is he says, I'm happy to give you all the food that you used to get in your father's house. Just one thing, don't eat at my table. I don't want you eating with me. Take the food and go and eat in your room. I don't want you eating with me. Have a shus b'yodah, says the Shulchan Aruch. He can do that. Uvivad shiyechiluma b'leil Shabbos, as long as on Friday night they eat together. Why is that? Why must they eat together on Friday night? Because of Kiddush, no? No? For romantic reasons. The Shabbos is the time that they relax, and Shabbos is in the time where they're likely to be intimate, and intimacy doesn't start in the bedroom. Intimacy starts hours and hours before that. And it starts with a meal, and it starts with relaxing, and with a glass of wine, and candlelit dinner. This romance has to start hours before. So you can't say, you know, go and have supper in your room and we'll meet in the bedroom. That's not how it's meant to be. You want to be together, you want intimacy together, you spend the evening together. You invest in the relationship as it ought to be. So Shabbos, they have to be together. V'yesh cholkim, and some disagree, and that's how the Ramo paskin, so that is the halacha. Usvirulu v'nehol, de lo yuchaloi mashitehi tochcha levado, elam ken kiblo aleo mirtzeno, he may not require that she eats on her own, unless that's what she wants. So that's not something he can insist on. She is entitled. When we say he's obligated with her mezoinos, that means to join him at the dinner table. That means to have dinner together. That doesn't mean to be given a voucher to go and get her food somewhere. That's not what it is. Mezoinos means eating together, joining together at the table. Which is interesting because mezoinos comes from the word zan, which means nourishment. So what would the Ramo be holding? If a man is chayev, we're talking about the law here. We're not talking about romantic relationships. We're talking about the law. So if the halacha is, I'm obligated to provide food for my wife, why do I have to eat the food with her? Why do we have to be sitting at the same table? Because that's what's nourishing for her. It's not that food. It's not just about the nutritional value of the food. It's about the meal and it's about the company. And she's nourished by being able to sit down to dinner with her husband. And he owes her that. That's something he has to do. Yes. If she says I want to eat on my own, then that's fine. But otherwise, nor can you say, I'm not coming to supper tonight. According to the Ramo, you can't say that. I'm not coming to supper tonight. Have supper on your own. Can't say that. You owe it to her. You have to eat with her. Unless she says, it's okay. I would actually be happier if you didn't come to supper tonight. Then you've got other problems. But that's okay. And how much food do you have to provide for her? And the Shulchan Aruch goes through the various things, and then says, after going through the list, this is a poor person. But if you're a wealthy person, you provide for her according to your wealth. Then we get to the following piece. The Yeshua Mrim Od, says the Ramo, and furthermore, the Ramo says at the end of Sif Gimel, the Chayov Lahaskir Atzmoi Kepoel Velozu Nishte. If necessary, a man has to hire himself out like a laborer in order to provide food for his wife. He can't say, look, I can't afford it. She must go out and work and provide for herself. If necessary, if the only way that he can provide food for is by hiring himself out to work, then that's in fact what he has to do. And the source for that is in the piece of Gemara that we'll do on Daf Samach Gimel. But before we do the Gemara on Daf Samach Gimel, we should have a look at the Mishnah on Daf Nun Ches Amud Beis, on Daf Nun Tes Amud Beis, on 59b, where the Mishnah says, Ve'elu melochus sheho'isho oiso lebalo. These are the jobs, the tasks, chores, that a woman is expected to do for her husband. To chenes, she grinds, the oifo, she bakes, umchabeses, she launders, the vashilis, she cooks, umenikos, benos, she breastfeeds the baby, matzas loy hamito, she makes the bed, voiso betzemer, she weaves wool. Those are the kinds of work which she's expected to do. The reason for which she's expected to do, Rav Huna has already said on the previous page, is because that is reciprocation for his obligation to support her. So there's a reciprocal obligation. He supports her, but then she works for him, basically. And that's the arrangement. Now, she is free, according to Rav Huna, to say, I don't need your food and support, and I'm working for myself. I don't want to work for you. She's free to say that. But if she doesn't want that, if she wants to be supported, so you've really got two types of women here. You've got a woman who says, I feel secure in providing for myself. Say, fine. Provide for yourself if that's how you feel secure. You have another woman who says, I feel secure in being provided for. I like to feel that my husband's providing for me. That's fine. But then you need to provide in reciprocation to your husband. There's certain things he does for you, certain things you do for him. You have the choice. The wife has the choice, according to Rav Huna, and that's how we paskin. She has the choice as to whether she wants to be opt into this reciprocal relationship or opt out of it. What she can't do is have the best of both worlds. So I want you to provide for me, and I'm doing my own work, I'm not working for you. I'm in this feminist stuff. She's entitled to say, I'm a feminist. I'm not making your bed, I'm not cooking, I'm not taking care of the babies, all of that. I'm not doing any of that, and I'll support myself. Don't need your support. That's fine. But she can't say, I'm not doing any of that stuff, and you must support me. That she's not obligated to say. Now, exactly which of these jobs are in reciprocation to his support? Is it all of them? Or is it only the commercial ones? There's quite a lot of discussion about that. And some of it we might have a time to go into. What's interesting is the continuation of the Mishnah. Hichnisa lo shivcho achas. If he provides her with a servant, and the Shulchan Aruch paskens that one should provide servants, if one can afford them. Lo techenes v'lo eifo. The first thing that she stops doing is she doesn't have to work in the kitchen. So this whole image of the Jewish wife has to kind of cook and bake and all of that, that's an outcome of poverty, not of the Jewish ideal. The Jewish ideal is not that the woman sits in the kitchen cooking and baking. If she wants to, because she enjoys it and she likes it, wonderful. But that she has to do it as an obligation, not required. Get servants to do that. Hire a chef. It's not her job. Shtayim, if you can afford two servants. Ein levasheles. Not only doesn't she bake, she doesn't even cook. She doesn't go into the kitchen at all. And not only that, ein minikos bano. She doesn't have to breastfeed the child either. Hire a wet nurse. Not her job. And this really wrecks to pieces the whole image of the Jewish wife, isn't it? So if you can afford it, you don't have to take care of the babies and you don't have to go into the kitchen. What do you do? Sholish? You have a third servant? And matas le'amita. You don't even make the bed. It's interesting. Making the bed is like the last thing that goes. Why is that? And you would think in terms of the conventional, the stereotypical picture of what the Jewish wife should be. If you can afford a servant who can only work for a few minutes every day, what would the servant do? Say, do the beds. She'll take care of the baby and she'll work in the kitchen. No. Doing the beds is the last thing she gives up. Because that's intimate. That's all that's based on intimacy. They know so the tzemer and she doesn't spin the wool and all of that. Arba, if you can afford four servants, Yosheves Bekatedro, she sits on a throne. She can sit all day on her throne and she can just gaze and look, and that's just fine. That's wonderful. If one can afford that's absolutely fine. So it's a matter of practicality. It's not a matter of ideal. The ideal is you can afford four servants and she sits in her throne. She's a queen. That's the ideal. The ideal is not that she should toil and struggle. And you still have to support her, yes, absolutely. And pay for the servants. There's discussion about whether some of the intimate things that are not recorded in the Mishnah, like serving the meal. There's some intimate things that she should still do, even if there's wealth, because that's part of the relationship. And there again, sometimes we find that in affluent homes, the woman is quickest to give up the intimate things and hangs on to the chores, whereas really what she should be doing is giving up the chores and hanging on to the intimate things. Cooking and baking is a chore. Serving is intimacy. But because of the stereotypes that we've been given in terms of what is okay and with women's lib, it's kind of for a woman thinks it's infidelity to serve. But serving is a wonderful, just as he needs to serve her too at times. They're different types of service. But serving an individual, a person, is just a wonderful way to build relationship. Because what happens when you serve somebody? Yes, you create obligation. You've just given them something. So for a woman to say, you know, go and help yourself. That's fine. I'll go and help myself. You go and help yourself. I owe you nothing. You owe me nothing. Let's carry on. I work for myself. You work for yourself. I owe you nothing. You owe me nothing. And so we build a relationship without indebtedness. Great. What kind of relationship? What did we just learn in the Chovos HaAvavos? That the art of relationship is the recognition of indebtedness. And the art of creating relationship is to create indebtedness. How do you create indebtedness? By serving. It's the most crazy thing for a woman to want to give up that that creates the most indebtedness in a man. Why would she want to do that? But women do seem to want to do that. Yes, but that's the indebtedness. That's the reciprocation. By it creates love both ways. If the man appreciates it, if the man treats her like a servant, then it's incredibly humiliating. And of course she isn't going to do that. But if the man treats her, what did Avraham Avinu do? What did we learn from Avraham in the beginning of Vayera? Who served the guests? He didn't get the servants to serve the guests. That he wasn't going to give up, because that creates indebtedness. Once he served them, they're indebted. Once they're indebted, he says, you know, I've got a Dvar Torah. They can't say, well, you know, we touch your time for us to go. You could say that if you were served by servants and you gave the servants a tip, and now there's no indebtedness. And now the Balabos says, I want to say a Dvar Torah, you could say, you know what, not interested. But if the Balabos has served you, you can't, so they have to listen. They have to engage. Now he's got them engaging in Torah. But how does he create that indebtedness? By serving them. Service is a wonderful thing. Service is how you keep a customer. Service is how you keep a relationship. Service is how you keep a marriage. Service is a wonderful thing. What is the Hebrew word for service? Avodah. It's what we do in the Beis HaMikdash. It's the highest form of human activity, is service. There's nothing greater than service. What does the Maseilas Yesharim say in the piece we've just learned? Sheyeda Adam. What does a person have to know? She's about the Yisamis. What is his avodah hatmima, says the Maseilas Yesharim? What is avodah hatmima? Perfect service. That's how you create connection with God. You connect with people by serving people. There's nothing humiliating in service. Service is a means of creating intimacy and closeness with people. The Gemara goes on to say it's not directly connected. It's just interesting that there is such a view. It's not brought in halacha, but it is such a view. Matnitzin deloy k'Rabbi Chiya. Our Mishnah disagrees with Rabbi Chiya. The Tani Rabbi Chiya, because Rabbi Chiya holds, ein isho elo leyofi. A woman is designed for beauty, and she should not do anything that detracts from her beauty. And for her to toil, even if there aren't any servants, she should not be toiling. She should not be grinding and doing hard labor. She should not do anything that damages her beauty. That's what she's for, that she's to bring beauty. And isho elo lebonim, for children. And isho elo letachshitei isho. A woman is to decorate, to make her beautiful, to give her jewelry, to give her beautiful things. That's what she's for. She's there to spoil. She's there to love. She's there to adore. Isn't that beautiful? Just to know that there is such a concept in. And so, as I say, the Mishnah says, no, women might have to work. If there isn't money, the women might have to work. But that's not the ideal. The Mishnah does say, even if there's money, there should be a certain amount of, a woman should have some kind of professional activity. Rabbi Eliezer disagrees with the Tanakhama, saying that she should sit in the throne and just gaze out of the garden all day. Even if there are 100 slaves, she should at least knit or weave, do something. Because if she's does nothing, her boredom will bring to craziness. It's not good for a person to be bored. A person needs to be active, and so she should have some hobby or some activity or some professional activity or volunteer activity, whatever it is, that she's not stuck in a situation of boredom. But that has nothing to do with serving him. That has nothing to do with the commercial needs. It's talking about a wealthy household. So you've got this whole range of a woman's activities. Now we go to the Gemara on Daf Samech Gimel Lamed Aleph, and there we have an interesting case in the Mishnah. Hamoiredes al Baala. What happens about a woman who rebels? She says, "I won't. I refuse." Poichatin lo miksufto. We start deducting from her ksuba. Her ksuba is a debt that the husband has. That's what a ksuba is. A ksuba is a credit that gets paid out on death or divorce. So, but she's always got the credit. It's a bankable credit. She can sell that credit. So it's a credit that she has. But we start deducting from the credit. So she starts losing credit every day that she rebels. Shiva dinorim b'shabbos, 7 dinar a week. Rabbi Yehuda omer shiva tapikin. Rabbi Yehuda says half that amount. Ad mosai hu poiches ad keneged ksufto. How much do you deduct? You deduct until the ksuf is finished. There's no more money to deduct. Rabbi Yossi says you carry on deducting beyond that because you can put her into debt so that if she inherits later on, she has to pay him from that. So we fine her, in other words, for this rebelliousness. So it goes on, and then towards the end of the Mishnah it says, "V'chein ha-moreid al-ishto." And likewise, if he rebels and says, "I refuse," "Mosifin al-ksuv to shleisha dinarim b'shabbos," we add to a ksuva. So now his indebtedness increases to her, and that's also a fine. So there is a principle of a moreid and a moreides, a rebellious husband or a rebellious wife, and there's a fine for that rebelliousness. Says the Gemara, "Moreides mimai." What is she rebelling about? What is she refusing? What is this talking about? So there are two views. Rav Huna Omar mitash mishamito. Rav Huna says conjugal rights. She denies him intimacy. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina Omar mimlocha. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina says she refuses to work. She refuses to serve him. So I won't serve you. So the Mishnah says, Tznan, we learn in the Mishnah, V'chein ha-moreid al-ishto. In the same way, the Mishnah says, if he rebels against her. What does that mean? Bishlom olamanda ma mitash mish l'chay. If we say that this rebelliousness is referring to conjugal rights, then I understand. If she denies him, we fine her. If he denies her, we fine him. Understand. El olamanda ma mimlocha, but if it's talking about work, Mi meshubedla? Does he have to work for her? Where does he have to work for her? Answers Gemara in Ba'omer Eini Zan Ve'Eini Mefarnes. If he says, I'm not going to provide for you. I don't need you to work for me, but I'm not going to provide for you either. So it's that little piece that the Gemara goes into to analyze. That is, he says, the words in the Mishnah is, Hamoired, Hamoiredes and Hamoired. The Gemara says, what is this rebelliousness? What is this refusal? Refusal to do what? And the Gemara comes to the conclude two views, Rav Huna and Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina. Rav Huna says conjugal rights. The Gemara have no problems with that. Understand that. What does that mean? Therefore, according to Rav Huna, what happens if she refuses to do work? What then would we say? Is she a Moiredes? If she says, I'm not working. Says Tosfos, no, she's not a Moredis then, because she's entitled to say, I'm not working and I don't need anything from you. Whether that's a good marriage or not is another issue, but she's entitled to say, I'm not working for you, I don't need anything from you. Not giving to you, not receiving from you. So that's not Moredis, it's not rebelliousness, it's a contract that she's entitled to forego. So that's what Rav Huna holds, but not Rabbi Yossi, but Rabbi Chanina. He says, Mimlocha. That even from work, so either Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina holds that the woman is not entitled to opt out of that reciprocal contract. She has to provide for him, and in she has to work for him, and in reciprocation he has to support her and provide for her. There isn't the option out. Or we've got to say that Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina holds that the reciprocation only applies to commercially related work. So to go out and work, to weave and sell the woven material, or to spin and to sell the thread, that she can say, I'm doing that for my own account and I don't need you to support me. I run my own business. I make more money than you do, so I don't need you to support me. I plan to keep my own money. That she's entitled to do. But the other jobs which relate to the family and to relationship and to intimacy, the cooking and the baking and the serving and so on, that she has to do because that's part of marriage. Is possibly what Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina holds. Now Tosfos says the following. Tosfos says that Rabbeinu Eliyahu proves from here, Shechayev Odom Lahaskir Atzme Lelamed Tinoikos Olasos Melocha Acheres Kedei Lozen Nesishto. A person has to go so far even as hiring himself out to provide for his wife. Where does Rabbeinu Eliyahu get that from? Because what does it say? It says when he says, I won't. Just look at it carefully. The wording in the Mishnah is Moired, and what is the Moired we're talking about? Melocha. Melocha means labor. The Gemara says, what kind of labor could he rebel against? Answers the Gemara, supporting her. Now there's a little bit of a gap there. So supporting her doesn't necessarily mean labor. He could have a big bank account and he supports her out of capital. He could support her out of his investments. It doesn't mean labor. So Rabbeinu Eliyahu says, from the fact that the Gemara uses the word labor for support, implies that if the only way he can support her is to labor, then he's got to do that too. So what we're looking at is an interesting halakhic idea. What does she have a claim on? His physical energy or his bank account? When she has the right to support, what sustains that right? Where does that obligation rest? With his assets or with his body, with his energy? Do you follow the difference? If it's with his assets and he has no assets, he says, sorry, can't pay you. So for example, a Baal Chayv, if a person is indebted and he can't pay, so you can't pay, you're bankrupt. But if we say it's his body that she has a right to, then we say, what do you mean you can't pay? You're a person, an able-bodied person. Go and hire yourself out. Even if you don't have assets, go and hire yourself out. That's what you have to do. Says Rabbeinu Eliyahu, you have to do even that. But Rashi says, no, the reason it's called melacha is because the obligation to support is in reciprocation to her melacha. So hers is physical labor. Hers is not about assets. Her assets do not belong to him. If she brings assets into the marriage, he manages those assets, but he doesn't own them. So her obligation to him is not from her assets. Her obligation to him is from her labor. And the assumption of Rabbeinu Eliyahu is that that's reciprocal. Just as she has to labor for me, I have to labor for her. No, says Rashi, I have to support her in return for her labor. But it's not that I have to labor too. Rabbeinu Eliyahu brings a proof from this, from the Ksuba. And the proof from the Ksuba is going to be very important in a moment. Because in the Ksuba we write, Aflach v'oikir, I will work for my wife and honor her. Work for her, says Rabbeinu Eliyahu. So you see, that means even if you have to go out and work as a laborer. No, says Rabbeinu Tam, it doesn't mean that. It means even if I have to work in my fields to grow food for her, I'll do that. But what we do see, and this is what I touched on in Shul on Shabbos, we see that in Jewish thought, working in my fields to grow potatoes and carrots is less infridig, less humiliation than hiring myself out even as a teacher. So in our society, again, people are measured by their jobs. In Torah society, people are measured, status is by how much freedom you have. The highest value is freedom, the freedom to use my time as I want. So a laborer has his own, he's free. He wants to stop laboring for a while to say Kriya Shema, he can do that. He wants to stop laboring to daven, he can do that. He wants to take an hour off to learn his daf yomi, he can do that. But an employee can't, even if the employee is a chief executive. He's not allowed to take that time off. He's working. His time is sold. So if, and we're not talking about a person who hasn't sold his time but is selling services or goods, that's different. Then you're working for yourself. So if your deal is to deliver a certain amount of value, then you're not a slave. Then you're delivering value in your own time. But if you're an employee where you're selling time and there is an expectation that you work a certain amount of time, that time doesn't belong to you. And the last thing that a Jew wants to do in good Jewish life, as I said, the fact is in our economy it doesn't work that way. So we at least need to be conscious of the fact that it isn't working that way. But from a Jewish perspective, the last thing we want to do is sell our time. Because that's one of the most valuable things we have. Sell anything. Sell your house. Sell your car. Sell anything. Just don't sell your time. That's a Jewish philosophy. Again, I'm saying we don't live that way. But the first thing we sell, how are we raised? Go to university and get a degree so that you can sell your time, get a job, enslave yourself. And it's interesting that the young people of today, there's a lot of work that we're doing at the moment in how to attract and retain talent, because the young generation of today just operates on a completely different value system. And for them, time is far more valuable than money. And they know that you can make a whole lot of money in a little time. It's not about spending your career climbing a corporate ladder so that 5 years before you die, you can retire with money in the bank. They've thrown that out. That's not the value of the young people anymore. It's not the value system. And you know what? Their value system is more closely aligned to the Torah's one than the parents' one was. If you've got to go to university, get yourself a job, see the way through. The young people of today know that's not the route. It doesn't have to be done that way. You can make a lot of money quickly if you're really good, if you're really smart. And they're much more interested in that and retaining their freedom. The freedom to use their time. What they do with their time, that's another issue. But they value the freedom of time. And that's a very Jewish idea. That's why Jewish people were always in their own little businesses. That's why they were entrepreneurs. That's why there was nothing humiliating about being a laborer or being a wagon driver or whatever it is. A person had his own time. There was huge status in being master of your own time. And this is a new thing that we've kind of made slavery into a status. That as long as you're working for a great owner and he's paying you a lot of money, I once met a very well-known basketball player in my gym in Los Angeles. And he had just signed an enormous contract and everybody was around getting his autograph. And I said to him, what's the difference between you and your ancestors who came from Africa? It's just the amount that you sell your souls for. At the end of the day, you're a slave. They trade you. The teams trade you from one team. You're an object. It's just that you got paid more than your ancestors were paid. It's still slavery. Why are they asking for your autograph? Did anybody ask for your ancestors' autograph? We think just because the quantum is big that it's not slavery. I'm earning a lot of money, so I'm not a slave. You are. You haven't even got time in the day to daven mincha. What are you, free? Of course you're a slave. You haven't got time to take out to learn. And if you do, you're not allowed to be taking time out to learn because you're stealing that. So the moment you take time out for yourself, you're stealing. Is that freedom? That's not freedom. And so Rabbeinu Eliyahu says that even a person is obligated, if he can't support his wife, even to become a teacher. What's wrong with being a teacher? The only thing that's wrong with being a teacher is you're a wage earner. You're employed. Rather be a peasant. You want to teach? Teach for nothing. Don't take on a job to teach. Don't take on a job to do anything, if you can. Of course, again, I'm talking about ideals in our economy. The fact is, it's not really, but at least we need to know that we're slaves. We need to understand what really happens. That's the source of this discussion. So there are more paskins like Rabbeinu Eliyahu and says a man has to go out and work. The Vilna Gaon says that that's not the view of most poskim. The Vilna Gaon says that that far you don't have to go. Yes, you have to work your own fields, you have to do whatever you can, but to sell your time you don't have to do. Says the Vilna Gaon. The Chelkach Mechoykek brings an interesting idea from the Ksuba. According to those who say, like the Ramon himself, that you do have to go out and work. What happens if you can support your wife, but not to the level she's accustomed to? What then? Do you still have to go out and work? Is this just for poverty? If you can't support her at all, you have to go out and take a job? Or even if you can't support her to the level she was accustomed? Says the Chalkis Mechoykek, it says in the Ksuva, Aflach Va'okir, I will work and I will honor. So if the obligation, the working and the honor go hand in hand, I will work so as to be able to honor you. I will work so as to be able to afford to give you the life that is honorable and dignified for you. And so that becomes the source of the Shulchan Aruch. It's two views brought in the Tosfos on Daf Samach Gimel, Rabbeinu Eliyahu on the one hand, and Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam on the other hand. Rabbeinu Eliyahu saying that one does have to hire oneself out, Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam saying one does not have to hire oneself out. The Shulchan Aruch passed me like Rabbeinu Eliyahu that you do have to. The Vilna Gaon saying that that's not so clear. But one thing is for sure, that the obligations go far. For the provision of a woman's sense of security, and her sense of security comes from both of those, aflach ve'okir, and that's why they're in the ksuba. A woman's security comes from being honored, and from being supported. She needs both of those to feel secure. And the husband has to find the means within himself, both the physical means and the emotional means, to provide her with support and to provide her with honor, so that she has the security for which she is entitled. And in return for that, there's a whole lot of stuff that she does for him. And again, based on the Mitzvah Shorim, that's how a reciprocal relationship is built. Reciprocal relationship is not built by each person taking care of themselves. Reciprocal relationship is by each person exposing their vulnerability and saying, I need you to help me in this area, because that's my area of weakness. And I will help you in your area of weakness, so that together we form a unit that is much stronger than either of us could have been on our own. And that builds relationship, and that builds a marriage.